Hey everyone, and welcome back. We're doing something a little different for today's deep dive. We're going to be taking a look at a 1980 episode of Milton Friedman's Free to Choose.
Okay.
It's called From Cradle to Grave.
Interesting.
And I know what you're thinking.
What?
1980. What could that possibly have to do with me today?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
But stick with us.
Okay.
Because the questions this episode raises about welfare, personal responsibility, and community well-being are actually still surprisingly relevant.
Really?
Especially when we're thinking about how to make a difference right here in our own neighborhoods today.
You know, you're absolutely right. Even though it's from a different era, the episode digs into some really fundamental issues that we're still grappling with today.
Yeah.
Like, how do we best support those in need?
Yeah.
What's the right balance between government assistance and individual initiative?
Right.
And how can we create thriving communities where everyone has the opportunity to succeed?
Okay.
All questions we're still asking ourselves.
All right, let's jump in. So the episode starts by taking us way back in time.
Okay.
To Bismarck's Germany.
Wow.
And Lloyd George's Britain.
Okay.
This is where this whole idea of a welfare state, you know, providing security from cradle to grave, first started gaining some traction.
Right.
And as the episode highlights, the Great Depression really pushed this idea forward.
It makes sense in the historical context, right?
Yeah.
The Depression was such a seismic event.
Yeah, it shook people's faith in the free market.
Right. And it left a lot of people wondering, you know, if capitalism could really provide for everyone.
Yeah.
And so in response, intellectuals and policymakers like President Franklin D. Roosevelt began to see a larger role for government.
Yeah.
You know, in providing a safety net.
Okay, but here's where things get really interesting.
Okay.
Friedman argues that even the most well-intentioned welfare programs can have unintended consequences.
Okay.
He's not questioning, you know, the compassion behind these programs.
Right.
But he is challenging us to look at the actual impact that they have on individuals and communities. And to drive home this point, he uses this really powerful visual.
Okay.
A dilapidated apartment building in the Bronx.
Okay.
Originally, it was intended to provide affordable housing.
Right.
But it ended up becoming a symbol of urban decay.
Oh, wow.
So this raises some tough questions about the effectiveness of government programs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even those that are, you know, designed with the best of intentions.
It really makes you think.
It does.
Yeah.
Like, are there ways to help people without creating dependency or undermining their sense of agency?
That is the question, isn't it?
It is.
That's exactly what Friedman is asking.
Okay.
He introduces this concept of the welfare trap.
Okay.
Which is where individuals become so reliant on government assistance that they lose the motivation to work and improve their lives.
Right. And the episode really brings this issue to life through personal stories.
Okay.
Like Richard Brown.
Okay.
He was working as a hospital orderly.
Okay.
And he actually talks about how he could make more money if he quit his job and went on welfare.
Wow.
But he chooses to work because of his pride and his desire to support his family.
Right.
And then there's Maureen Ramsay in England, who expresses this feeling of being trapped by the system, discouraged from seeking better opportunities because she's afraid of losing her benefits.
I see.
So these stories really highlight this complex human side of welfare.
Yeah.
And the struggles, the choices, and those unintended consequences.
Yeah.
That can rise from even the most well-meaning programs.
It's a good reminder
that,
you know, behind all the statistics and the policy debates, there are real people.
Yeah.
Whose lives are being impacted in very real ways.
Yeah. It prompts us to ask, are we truly helping people?
Right.
Or are we inadvertently creating systems that make it harder for them to achieve their full potential?
That's the question.
It is. Now, Friedman also talks about the costs associated with these programs. He points to the massive Social Security headquarters building.
Oh, wow.
As a symbol of this vast system that's administering these funds.
It's a really striking image.
It is.
You know, it underscores the sheer scale of the bureaucratic apparatus.
Right.
And it raises concerns about potential inefficiencies and waste.
Right.
Makes you wonder, you know, could some of those resources be used more effectively?
Yeah.
If they were directed closer to the people that they're intended to help.
Right. Like, are there ways to streamline the system and cut down on unnecessary bureaucracy?
It's a valid question.
It is. And then he gets into a really sensitive topic.
Okay.
The potential impact of welfare on moral fiber.
Oh.
And the risk of corruption.
Right.
He even cites a statistic from the episode.
Okay.
A staggering $7.5 billion.
Wow.
Lost to fraud, waste, and abuse in a single year.
Wow.
Now, it's important to approach this topic with nuance.
Right.
And to recognize that the vast majority of people who rely on welfare are honest and hardworking individuals. But Friedman's point is that any system, especially one involving large sums of money, is susceptible to corruption.
I see.
And he argues that dependence on government assistance can, in some cases, erode personal responsibility.
Okay.
And create opportunities for both recipients and administrators to exploit the system.
So he's not necessarily saying that welfare is inherently corrupting.
Right.
But that we need to be mindful of the potential pitfalls.
Exactly. Put safeguards in place.
Yeah.
So it's about recognizing that systems, even those designed with good intentions, can have unintended consequences.
Absolutely.
And it highlights the importance of accountability and transparency.
Right.
To ensure that resources are used responsibly and reach those who truly need them.
Okay.
Now, the episode doesn't just focus on the problems with welfare.
Okay.
It also explores some real-world examples of communities that are trying to address poverty in different ways.
Okay.
One of the examples that stands out is the story of the Woodlawn Organization in Chicago.
Okay.
It's a fascinating case study.
In what way?
Because it shows how even well-meaning community efforts can become entangled in bureaucracy and government overreach when they rely too heavily on public funding.
Oh, that's interesting. What happened with them?
Well, they use government funds to build these beautiful homes for middle-class residents.
Oh.
These homes even had expensive security systems all paid for by taxpayers.
Mm.
So Friedman uses this example to highlight a potential irony.
Okay.
A program intended to uplift a community ends up benefiting those who are already relatively well off.
I see what you mean.
So it raises the question, are there more effective ways to support those in need?
Yeah.
Perhaps through more localized community-driven initiatives?
Yeah.
You know, something that's more in line with our Think and Act Locally theme?
Exactly.
And that's where the episode introduces this contrasting example, the Sweat Equity Project in the South Bronx.
Okay, how is this different?
Well, in the Sweat Equity Project, residents took the initiative to rebuild their community with minimal government assistance. They literally rolled up their sleeves and got to work, renovating dilapidated buildings, transforming their neighborhood.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? So they saw a problem.
Yeah.
And they decided to take action themselves rather than waiting for the government to come in and fix it.
Right.
And that's precisely the point Friedman's trying to make.
Yeah.
He believes that individuals and communities have the power to create positive change, often more effectively than top-down government programs.
I see.
He sees sweat equity as a powerful testament to the spirit of self-reliance.
Yeah.
And the transformative potential of community effort.
That's really cool.
Okay, so we've seen some of the potential pitfalls of traditional welfare programs.
Right.
And we've also seen the power of these community-driven solutions.
Yeah.
But where do we go from here?
Well, that's the question, right?
It is.
What are some concrete steps we can take to support those in need while also fostering self-reliance and community empowerment?
Exactly.
Well, Friedman doesn't just critique the system. He actually offers up some potential solutions.
Like what?
One of his most radical proposals is the idea of a negative income tax.
Oh, yeah. I've heard that term thrown around.
Yeah.
But I'll admit, I'm not entirely sure I understand how it works.
Sure. So imagine flipping the regular income tax on its head.
Okay.
Instead of paying the government when you earn above a certain threshold.
Right.
The government pays you if you're below that threshold.
Okay. So it's like a guaranteed minimum income.
Exactly.
Ensuring that everyone has enough to meet their basic needs.
Right. And then as your income increases, the government supplement gradually decreases.
Okay.
Eventually phasing out entirely when you reach a certain income level.
So the idea is to provide a safety net.
Right.
But without discouraging people from working and earning more.
Exactly.
That sounds pretty elegant, at least in theory.
It does.
But I imagine there are some practical challenges.
Oh, absolutely.
To implementing something like this.
Yeah. For one thing, you know, the existing welfare bureaucracy, with its vested interests and complex regulations,
yeah,
it might resist such a drastic change.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
It reminds us that even when we're talking about policy changes, there are real people and institutions involved.
Absolutely.
And change can be disruptive.
For sure.
And then Friedman also raises the question of whether everyone would be equipped to manage their finances responsibly.
Oh, interesting.
Under a negative income tax system.
Right. Could people make wise spending choices if they were suddenly receiving a guaranteed income?
Right? It highlights the importance of financial literacy and education,
Yeah.
especially for those who might be new to managing their own money.
For sure.
So maybe alongside a negative income tax,
Yeah.
there would need to be some support systems in place
Right.
to help people make sound financial decisions.
Absolutely. Providing people with the tools and knowledge to manage their finances effectively would be crucial.
Okay, so we've talked about the potential benefits and challenges of a negative income tax.
Right.
But let's bring this back to our think and act locally theme.
Okay.
Even if a negative income tax isn't feasible at a national level right now,
Right.
are there ways to adapt some of its core principles to local initiatives?
That's a great question.
What do you think?
Well, what if we explore ways to provide more direct financial assistance to those in need within our communities? You know, cutting through some of that bureaucratic red tape.
I like that idea.
Yeah.
It makes me think about that sweat equity projects we were discussing.
Yes.
Could we encourage and support similar initiatives
Yeah.
where residents take ownership of addressing local challenges and work together to create solutions from the ground up?
I think that's a fantastic idea. Instead of relying solely on top-down government programs, we can empower individuals and communities to take a more active role in shaping their own destinies. We can foster a spirit of self-reliance while also providing support and resources to help people succeed.
And thinking back to Friedman's point about the potential for private charity to
Right.
be more effective and compassionate than government programs,
Yeah.
maybe there are ways to revitalize and strengthen local charitable organizations and initiatives.
I think that's a crucial part of the equation. You know, fostering a culture of giving and volunteering where people feel connected to their communities and are inspired to support those in need in a more personal and meaningful way.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And it's not just about financial support.
Right.
We can also encourage initiatives that empower individuals to develop skills,
Yeah.
find work, and ultimately become self-sufficient.
Absolutely.
Maybe we can support programs that provide job training,
Right.
mentorship,
Yeah.
and entrepreneurship opportunities,
For sure.
helping people build a brighter future for themselves and their families.
It's about empowering individuals to become active participants in their own economic well-being.
So what does this all mean for us as individuals who are passionate about making a difference in our communities?
Right.
What can we do to put these ideas into action?
Well, I think it starts with a shift in mindset. We need to move beyond simply complaining about the problems and start brainstorming creative and innovative solutions.
Thinking outside the box.
Exactly. Maybe there are entirely new approaches to addressing poverty and inequality that haven't even been imagined yet.
And it's a call to action
It is.
to get involved,
Yes.
to volunteer our time,
Yeah.
to donate to local charities,
Right.
to start or support community initiatives that are aligned with our values.
Absolutely. And to never underestimate the power of individual actions to create positive change. Even small steps, when multiplied across a community, can have a ripple effect and lead to significant transformations.
So as we wrap up this deep dive,
Yeah.
what's the one takeaway you want our listeners to hold on to?
I think it's this. We all have the power to be catalysts for positive change in our communities.
I love that.
Yeah, whether it's through supporting local organizations, volunteering our time, or simply being more mindful of the needs of those around us, we can all play a part in building stronger, more resilient, and more compassionate communities.
It all starts with that shift in mindset.
It
From
does.
feeling overwhelmed by the complexities
Yeah.
to feeling empowered to make a difference, one person, one neighborhood at a time.
And who knows, maybe by working together at the local level, we can even start to create the kind of systemic changes that Friedman was advocating for on a national scale.
That's an inspiring thought to end on.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
Of course.
We hope it sparked some ideas and motivated you to think and act locally in your own community.
Absolutely.
Until next time, keep diving.
All right, so we've talked about these big ideas and potential solutions. But I think our listeners are probably wondering.
Like, what does think and act locally actually look like in practice?
Right.
What are people actually doing to make a difference in their communities?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most inspiring examples is the work being done by community development corporations,
Oh, okay.
or CDCs.
CDCs.
These are nonprofit organizations that are really embedded in specific neighborhoods,
Okay.
and they're working to address a wide range of local needs.
Like what?
Everything from affordable housing to job creation.
So how do these CDCs embody this idea of thinking and acting locally?
Well, they're really on the ground tackling issues head on.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
What's really key is that they're often led by residents of the communities they serve.
Oh, okay.
So these are people who have firsthand experience with the challenges and opportunities in those neighborhoods.
Right.
They don't come in with a one-size-fits-all approach,
No.
but instead they listen to the community.
Yeah.
They identify the specific needs and then they develop tailored solutions.
So it's that ground-up approach.
It is.
We were talking about where the community is empowered to drive the change. They
Exactly.
want to see rather than having solutions imposed from the outside.
Precisely.
Yeah. And a lot of CDCs are focusing on creating economic opportunities
Yeah.
that can help lift people out of poverty.
Right.
So they might develop affordable housing projects
Right.
that also include job training programs or support local businesses
Right.
that provide jobs and services to the community.
It's about creating a holistic approach to community development.
I love that.
Yeah.
Integrating economic development into community development.
Yeah. It's not just about providing a temporary safety net.
Right.
It's about creating sustainable pathways for people to improve their lives.
Absolutely.
Another really inspiring trend is this rise of micro-lending programs.
Oh, yeah.
These programs provide small loans to entrepreneurs who
No.
might not qualify for traditional bank loans,
Right.
often women or people from marginalized communities. Right? They provide a crucial leg up for those who have the drive,
Yeah.
but lack the capital to start their own businesses.
It's incredible to see how these small loans can have such a big impact,
They really can.
empowering people to create their own opportunities and build their own futures.
Absolutely. And a lot of these programs go beyond just providing the loan.
What?
They also offer business training, mentorship, and other support systems.
So it's not just the money,
Yeah.
it's helping them.
Right. It's about giving people the tools and knowledge they need to not just survive,
Yeah.
but to thrive.
And that really resonates with the Think and Act Locally philosophy,
It
combining
does.
financial support and personal empowerment.
Yeah, it's about recognizing that people have the potential to create positive change in their own lives
Right.
and in their
And it's
communities.
important to remember
What?
that thinking and acting locally isn't just about big organized initiatives.
Right.
It can also be about everyday acts of kindness and support.
Yeah, within our neighborhoods.
Right. You're
Yeah.
so right.
Yeah.
Sometimes the most meaningful actions are the simplest ones,
Totally.
like checking in on an elderly neighbor,
Yeah.
volunteering at a local food bank,
Right.
or mentoring a young person in our community.
These small gestures can have a ripple effect,
They really can.
creating a more connected and compassionate community.
It's about recognizing that we're all interconnected
Yeah.
and that even small actions can make a difference in
Absolutely.
the lives of those around us.
We all have something to offer, whether it's our time, our skills, or simply our willingness to listen and support our neighbors.
So as we wrap up this deep dive,
Yeah.
what's the key takeaway you want our listeners to hold on to?
I hope listeners will walk away feeling empowered,
Yeah.
knowing that they have the power to be catalysts for positive change in their own communities.
I love that.
Yeah, we don't have to wait for someone else to fix things.
Right.
We can start making a difference right now, right here where we live.
And it doesn't have to be overwhelming.
It doesn't.
It can start with something small.
Yeah.
A simple act of kindness, volunteering a few hours a month, supporting a local organization.
Absolutely.
Even small steps, when multiplied across a community, can create a wave of positive change.
So let's all commit to thinking and acting locally to build stronger, more resilient, more compassionate communities.
Yeah.
It's in our hands to create the kind of world we want to see, starting right here in our own neighborhoods.
That's a powerful call to action and a great note to end on.
It is.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into Think and Act Locally.
Of course.
We hope you've gained some valuable insights and are inspired to make a difference in your own community.
Me too.
Until next time, keep diving.